everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, I just saw that new map that came out showing Arizona no longer in the extreme, anywhere in Arizona.
No in parts the of the state.
No
yeah,
parts of the
that?
State are in that extreme drought. We are now considered dry, which I doubt we're going to have that designation taken away. But it is amazing how all of that changed in just a couple of months. Buckmaster with you on this Friday, September the 10th, 2021, in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our radio station is 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. We're in our 11th year here on the radio. Worldwide live listening and podcasts on my website, buckmastershow.com. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our media partners, thank you very much. Dylan Smith, Tucson Sentinel.com. Thank you very much to Dan Shear, who happens to be with me in studio from the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Thank you, Dan, for not only your support through the years, but just last week, while Ann and I were able to get away for a beautiful week on the Central California coast.
Yeah, I enjoy sitting in for you. Thank you.
Thank you for being so much a part of our show. Tucson Local Media Group, Jim Nensel and his team at the Tucson Weekly, Inside Tucson Business, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. With me in studio, Pima County Administrator Chuck Huckleberry. Mr. Huckleberry, how are you?
Just fine, Bill. Glad to be here.
The big news coming out of Washington yesterday concerning now the Labor Department saying that pretty much if you've got 100 employees or more, you are going to have those employees either, one, make sure they get a vaccination, or two, there will be weekly testing. Pima County obviously has more than 100 employees. Are you and your team trying to figure out where you go from here? How does this affect you?
Bill, I think what our view is at this point is that we just simply wait till the rules come out of the Department of Labor to find out whether or not they're exempting local governments or counties or cities and towns or even state governments. Nobody knows at this point whether it applies to us or not. On its face, it would appear to. But again, I think our view is we'll just wait and look at the rules once they get published.
How many employees do you have, and what percentage of those do you feel have had at least one shot?
We have 7,000 employees, and as of last Friday, we reported we had 66% of our employees vaccinated with what we call an unvaccinated card, and that is really the employee volunteering to tell us how they were vaccinated, give us their name, and then we then go check the state vaccine database to make sure that they are. We have a deadline of receiving the incentive of October 1, so I believe that our percent vaccinated will climb hopefully over 75% and approach 80% by the time we get to October the 1st.
I was surprised to hear the Sheriff's Department, only 3 in 10.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things we have to do is really look at, is it because they're not applying for the I'm vaccinated cards, or is it true that they're not vaccinated? I think we'll get into much more detail with the Sheriff's Department and all of those what we call underperforming departments with regard to vaccination before the 1st of October. And I would hope that those numbers are because they just simply haven't applied for the cards or that process to confirm that they've been vaccinated. But we'll see.
What is the overall pitch now on the what's called disincentives and incentives? Could you summarize that?
Sure. Incentives are a $300 cash infusion into your paycheck as soon as you verify that you've been vaccinated, and 3 days of additional leave, what we call, leave for that purpose. The disincentives are the individuals, the employees who are not vaccinated, lose their what we call health benefit discounts, and that amounts to $35 a pay period. In addition, pursuant to the federal law, we're allowed to surcharge the lowest tier, 30% of extra cost. And so that really works out to about $60 a pay period, or roughly probably $130, $140 a month. And it's based on the fact that we know exactly how many employees who have been affected by or actually had medical care related to COVID-19 because we're self-insured. And our average cost per case is about $3,400. And so it's really in response to the additional cost burden placed on the system by those who choose not to be vaccinated and then become infected with COVID-19.
Here's Dan Scheer.
Would President Biden's announcement yesterday about mandatory vaccines affect your incentive program? People still going to get that?
People are still going to get it until we actually get the rules from the Department of Labor. I don't think the rules will come out of the Department of Labor by October the 1st, and that's our deadline for actually receiving an incentive.
3 days off seems like an awful lot. How did you arrive at that? And Maricopa County, it's 1 day.
I think it's just subjective. There wasn't a great deal of analysis associated with it. We looked at pandemic leave, the number of days we've given employees for federal pandemic leave and county pandemic leave. And 1 day seemed to be a little less of an incentive. 3 days is fine. They have to actually schedule those days with supervisors so that services are not interrupted when they take those additional days.
So it's not a situation where you think they need 3 days to recover from the vaccination. It's just, if we give them this, maybe that's a little bit more push toward getting it done.
Yes, that's correct. It's just kind of an added incentive on top of the cash.
The disincentives are interesting and frankly bothersome because I fully understand because you have now attached a number to it, $3,400 per person. But there are a lot of things people do that send them to the doctor and you're not charging for those. Why is this so important that you would add the disincentives?
It's very proven that a number of infections will lead to hospitalizations and a certain percentage will lead to death. We know those hospitalizations sometimes result in an ICU visit, and those are extraordinarily expensive. And so I think it's really related to the actuarial relationships between a particular disease and the cost of treating it. Sure, there are a lot of other things, in our healthy discounts, a smoker doesn't get $20 discount that a non-smoker does. Those who exercise get a certain discount. And so it's really trying to, employ all the factors that are associated with health and disease so that we have at least some financial responsibility placed on those who choose not to be vaccinated.
Have we reached a peak? Dr. Garcia, who heads up your health department, believes we have as far as COVID-19 and this variant.
I think our physicians are cautiously optimistic. I think time will tell. We've had cautious optimism before, long before the Delta variant came about. If you recall, 12 weeks ago, we actually eliminated our emergency order because we thought things were under control, and they were under control for a number of weeks until the emergence of the Delta variant. I think maybe we're peaking on the Delta variant because they become, at this point, about 100% of the infections of the people who are requiring medical care once we sequence the test. And so I think we're hopeful, but that doesn't mean we won't have another variant around the corner.
Dan.
State Attorney General Mark Brnovich has come knocking on the city of Tucson's door over their vaccine mandate. Now, maybe what President Biden did yesterday kind of ends all of that, but do you expect him to be coming to Pima County to ask a few questions?
Well, if he does, I think we have all the answers. Obviously, our incentive is an incentive, and our disincentive is a disincentive. Nothing mandates that we require employees to get vaccinated. We considered that. The board rejected it, and they chose incentives first, looking then at the number of employees who were taking us up on the incentives. They chose to add the disincentives to push those who might have been hesitant to get vaccinated to get vaccinated. So I think our point is we'd like to see every one of our employees vaccinated.
You're offering an opportunity for people to opt out of the vaccination for medical or religious reasons. Have you had a lot of those?
We haven't. Obviously, we'll use the same evaluation process that's used in our human resources department, that's used in a lot of things such as disability or family medical leave. You know, the issue of medical is fairly easy to attest to with a physician. The issue of deeply held religious beliefs sometimes is a little more difficult.
What about hospitals? What are you hearing generally of the hospitals in Pima County concerning the variant?
Well, for about the last 30-plus days, the ICU or the hospital capacity has been less than 5% of bed space. So I think it's a fairly critical issue, continues to be a critical issue for our hospitals. You know, they're right on the margin. You know, their biggest constraint with regard to beds is staffing those beds. And so I think it's going to continue to be a struggle.
Quarantine for school children, what are you hearing about that?
Through our public health agency, we have a very close relationship with all the school districts. I think we're pushing about 1,600 school infections at this point in time. I think that they've chosen kind of a very targeted view with regard to stopping infections in schools by closing classrooms as opposed to schools. Mm. And that's they probably have closed a half a dozen or more classrooms because of an outbreak specifically tied to a specific grade or school or location. Continue to monitor it. The biggest concern that we have is that we look at the age distribution of those children who are infected, and over half of that, we'll say 1,600, 1,800 infections, are in children ages 0 to 11 who have no vaccine opportunity at this point in time.
But one number that is missing is, of those 1,600 to 1,800, how many of those infections, those people have been fully recovered?
My guess is that most of them. The issue is that of the pediatric infections, we typically have anywhere from 5 to 10 patients in the pediatric system in our hospitals. And so that's very unusual.
Dan, did you have any more on COVID, or maybe we should take the break here or what?
One very quick question just to help people understand a little bit better. You said a couple of times that Pima County is self-insured. Can you briefly tell us what that means?
Well, it means that Pima County pays all the medical bills. An insurance company does not. And so we have a third-party administrator and our staff who you review, but we pay every hospital bill or every medical bill that our employees incur during the course of their employment.
And generally on the budget, when you look at the big financial picture for Pima County, try to characterize the COVID piece of it.
Well, the COVID piece has for about 2 years now fairly well dominated our budget discussions, caused us to be very conservative in budgeting, which I think is a plus. And when we think about, for example, the American Rescue Act plan funds, the county will receive about $203 million spread over 2 years. We have allocated and earmarked $130 million of that just for the public health response to COVID. So it's a very significant investment in public health. Today, we're still doing testing in Pima County. We have a discussion going on with the state about who pays for it. We're running 1,000 tests a day.
Are those free tests?
Those are all free tests. There's some debate about whether we should pay. Mm-hmm. The problem is that we're taking down all the barriers that would normally be placed for people to get medical care. Once you put a barrier up, such as paying for a test, the person who is infected isn't going to get that test, and they're going to be walking around spreading COVID to everyone else. So we've chosen the model that says don't put any barriers up with regard to COVID-19 or testing, and that testing is costing about $300,000 a week.
Wow. It's interesting. Will Humble was with us on the show yesterday, had a very interesting discussion. He's the former health director for the state of Arizona. His organization, the Arizona Public Health Association, just put out a survey about COVID and masks and vaccine. There is still a disconnect, Chuck Huckleberry. People that are not getting the shot, some of them are doing it because they still don't understand it's a free shot.
My guess is that's probably true. We have run over 400 mobile vaccination clinics at this point in time, and every vaccination is free. We have a testing site over at our Abrams Public Health Center. On the first floor, you get tested. If you turn out negative in even our Binax Now rapid test, we encourage you go to our second floor where there's a free vaccine.
The rapid test is really within 15 minutes, isn't it?
It is.
Wow. Okay, Dan, we're going to pause right here and tell everybody about our favorite bakery in town, and that is what?
That's Mona's.
We love Mona's Danish Bakery, Mr. Huckleberry, home of the Danish Kringle, that pastry that comes, oh my goodness, it's a bright and tasty multi-layered pastry with some great fillings. I prefer the almond. But people have told me, you know, Bill, there's so much more than the Danish Kringle up at Mona's, and that is true. Some great bakery goods. All of those, I prefer some of the almond croissants, but the baguettes that they do on the weekends, actually, those are available Wednesday through Sunday. Hey, if you've got a spaghetti dinner, pick up a baguette from Mona's like we did last weekend. It goes so great. Mona's, Northeast Corner, Swan and Sunrise. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com. Mr. Huckleberry, do you like bakery goods?
Oh, absolutely. that's why I'm always kind of trying to figure out how to lose a little weight. So I can pack in a few more bakery goods.
And maybe he needs a disincentive.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. All right. We will pause right here, Buckmaster, right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Welcome back. It is the Friday edition of the Buckmaster Show. My name is Bill Buckmaster. Dan Scheer is here from the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, and Chuck Huckleberry, Pima County Administrator, with us. We are all gathered in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dan, before we leave COVID, you had a couple of items that you wanted to bring up with Mr. Huckleberry.
Yeah, contact tracing. Has it been a bust?
No, it's actually been very good, because through contact tracing is frankly how we define those infections in those particular classrooms in schools. And so it's not perfect, but it's the best public health response we have to try and isolate COVID-19 infections.
You also voted to spend $2 million on a 4-month contract for a hotel, $130 a night for 117 rooms, for what?
It's actually a 28-month contract. It's 4 months at a time if we need it. It's really to isolate asylum seekers that are released to us from either the Border Patrol or Immigration and Customs Service. And what happens is that when they're released to us, we test them for COVID. If they are positive, and we're running about a 3% positive rate in those individuals, at least on the total release, then they're isolated. They're put into isolation during the normal period to which they're no longer infectious. Then they're turned back into that regular process that transmits them to their final point of destination, awaiting their asylum hearing. The biggest problem we've had is that obviously our Casa Salitas is set up for almost 300, but because of COVID spacing restrictions, it can only have about 60, hold 60. Mm. They hold 60 typically from 2 to 3 days. That's the transitional period. But what happens is that we've been getting releases from the Border Patrol and Customs that sometimes is 23 in a day, and the next day it's 160.
A busload.
Highly variable.
Yeah.
And so what happens is we have to have this space in order to house these individuals. First priority is to isolate the ones who have COVID-19 so they don't infect everyone else. And then the second one is when we get these surges, we have to have a place to house them, as opposed to if Casa Salitas is full.
Would they be offered a vaccine?
They're all offered a vaccine, and we probably have maybe a 30% uptake rate. The problem is, and I think probably that is, you know, we offer the Johnson & Johnson, which is the one shot, and some of them would like that, some would like others, and the others are a two-shot regime, and so by the time they're due the second shot,
they're
someplace else in the country.
Yeah.
And so what happens is those who don't want to get vaccinated, where they're finally transmitted to their final point of waiting for their asylum hearing, we're connecting with those communities to try and get them vaccinated.
Has the conversation begun about Afghan refugees? Typically, they're being housed right now at military installations around the country, and DM would seem like a natural in Fort Huachuca. Has that conversation begun?
It hasn't, and I think the reason it hasn't is that the group that we're taking are classified as asylum seekers. The others, the Afghans, are classified as evacuees, and there's a difference in how the federal government treats them. So I don't know exactly how we'll be called upon, but if we are, we'll certainly try and cooperate with the federal agencies in the resettlement process.
Here's Dan Scheer.
You mentioned earlier the amount of money coming to us from the federal government, and it's just to help out with COVID and everything. Do we expect in the future, is there anything out there that can give us the expectation of more money, or do you think this is the end of the line?
I pretty much think this is the end of the line. I think there will be some more money dedicated to testing, and I think that's important. What has happened is that I don't think we've been able to fully test. We've had this discussion about we should charge for it, which I think during a pandemic is really a bad policy. So I think that we'll have some more money, but it will be directly targeted where it should be, to public health agencies for a public health response.
Is the city of Tucson going ahead with charging unincorporated residents more for the delivery of Tucson water? What's the latest on that? That story seems like it's disappeared.
Well, they're still moving forward. They're trying to create a study that justifies the increase, which is really an odd way to go about it. We're participating.
But isn't there a precedent in this community of serving that water to unincorporated areas that goes back to 1972?
Probably even before that, probably into the 60s. So we've probably got a 50, 60-year history that all of a sudden needs to be changed. We questioned it. We will continue to question it. We will participate from the outside looking in on the study process and continue to point out all the flaws in that study process. I think the board has taken a position, and the chair of the board has written a letter to the mayor asking the city council and the mayor to reconsider that position because it's highly inequitable and questionably legal.
They point to other cities in Arizona.
They can point to other cities, but there is no other city in Arizona has the largest number of unincorporated residents served by that water utility over the longest period of time. In other cities, it's mostly a developer agreement to annex a particular, not annex a particular development, and they surcharge for a reason. And everybody in that community gets the surcharge, and they never had the lower rate. So they don't know the difference between the regular rate and the surcharged rate.
So this isn't the end of the story, you're saying?
I don't think so.
Dan Scheer.
There are eight courts or eight precincts in the Consolidated Justice Court, and you want to get rid of one of them. How come, and what's the process?
The process is the board creates and can not create Justice Court precincts. The rule is that there's judicial productivity credits that justifies the number of precincts you have. Those judicial productivity credits have been going down for probably the last 10 years. They do not justify the number of precincts we have today. Therefore, there's going to be one recommended for elimination, and the board will act or not act on that recommendation on September 21st.
So if you say there are fewer credits, that means there must be fewer cases filed, but the county is growing.
Much fewer cases filed, and we've seen it in traffic court. We see it in all courts. The number of filings are down, have been down. You know, part of the comment that we've heard is, oh, it's because of COVID-19. Well, we didn't have COVID-19 10 years ago, and so it's only been a recent phenomena, and those judicial productivity credits have been dropping for 8 years.
And you have only control over the Consolidated Justice Court, which is the eight courts, and then there are two others, one in Ajo, one in Green Valley. Nothing's going to happen to those.
No, this is really over the Consolidated Courts. The two standalone justice courts, Ajo and Green Valley, remain basically the same. Green Valley precinct may get a couple added census tracts in the far east side to where it's easy to get to down Houghton Road over to Sarita.
And so we may see a busier court down in Green Valley, and there is going to be one JP out of a job if this thing goes through.
That's correct.
I want to turn to Dan's area. Some very good news for people in your area, Dan, about a library.
Yeah, the brand new library. We did have a little one that was in a portable for years and years and years, and now we have a brand new Pima County Library, just opened on, I believe, Tuesday, and it is called the Library of the Future, and it certainly matches its name. And it is exciting for our community because we are growing at such a rapid pace. And really, Mr. Huckleberry, a library is a meeting place anymore. It's not just a library.
That's correct. What we've transitioned over the last 10 years or maybe even longer is that they've gone from being exclusively books and written materials to now all types of materials, including computer access, meeting rooms, and they turn out to be what I would classify as mini community centers for specific geographic areas of the community. So I think they've been, and that's been transitioning with our library for probably the last 10, 15 years. We now have 28 branches. We're probably going to add a couple of more, but it is a great facility, and you're exactly right. It's been designed as a library of the future.
What do you make of the dust-up over the RTA, the renewal of the RTA in the city of Tucson, wanting more weight at the table, Chuck Huckleberry?
Well, I think they can get more weight at the table once they revise state law, because state law actually defines the membership of the RTA board, and it's not weighted voting. So I think the theory is that, well, they weren't getting their fair share. I think if you look at the distribution of projects, the cost of those projects versus the contribution and sales tax from the city of Tucson, is that they're probably contributing 52, 55, maybe 60% of the revenues, but they're probably also getting 60% of the projects or more. And then I think they forget that this large unincorporated population shops in the city of Tucson. So those persons living in the unincorporated area are significant contributors to the sales tax revenues of the city of Tucson. So I think the equity argument really is falls far short of being true.
Here's Dan Scheer.
There are five supervisor districts, and every 10 years those districts are redrawn. If I'm not mistaken, you have suggested that those boundaries could remain as is, given the population dispersion. But a place like Sarita, let me bring that up. It is represented by three of the five supervisors. Shouldn't we be including, the idea of a community of interest, which would be Sarita, shouldn't they just have one, and can we get that corrected?
It's really up to the board as to how they redistrict, and they're going to be taking that up. Obviously, they have a year longer than the present deadline for Justice Court precincts. Historically, the board has set up a redistricting committee. That committee then looks at all the factors, takes the actual census data, makes sure that we don't dilute minority communities, or looks at communities of interest, just as you've said, and they'll come up with some lines. Doesn't require a great deal of change, but I believe there probably is some change required. Some would look at three supervisors representing Sarita as kind of a division. Others could look at it to say that maybe you could influence a majority of the board in decisions. So it could cut both ways.
Haven't so far, but as it's a more conservative community. But Green Valley is about 94% white. You're not going to dilute it.
The board voted to oppose the proposed Interstate 11 route. And for those that don't know, that is a planned highway expansion proposal that would connect Nogales to Wickenburg before joining the existing highways en route to Nevada. What was the opposition based on about I-11, the current routing?
I think the opposition is all related to the environmental impact of a new route. I think that, they're suggesting that the existing route of Interstate 10 be used for I-19 and I-11. that's very possible, but it's going to be very congested. The only good thing about that is that it might accelerate the third lane and frontage roads on I-19, which is desperately needed. And I think the other point is that I-11 as constructed within Pima County won't occur for probably 20 to 30 to maybe even 40 years. So it's a long time in the future.
But it certainly has a lot of people down where we are anxious because it would come through one neighborhood that's been there, you know, quite a while. And, you know, people get anxious about these things. Then you mentioned the 20, 30, 40 year thing, and they calm down a little bit.
Just a little. It's generational.
There you go.
Speaking of the future, interesting piece by Tony Davis in the paper a couple of weeks ago about a $4.1 billion desalinization plant. Boy. You know, it's an interesting thing to think about for the future, but it is certainly not the immediate future.
And I think that's what, you know, when we talked about it, we said, well, let's look at all the possibilities. And certainly it's a possibility, but it's out there as well. You know, how long did it take this state to get CAP built? 50 years plus.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's going to be another 50 years before we draw the first quart of water out of the ocean.
Has that been that program in San Diego, though, has been pretty successful, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
Yeah.
And again, you can draw it right from the sands underneath the ocean.
Right.
It's filtered once. All you got to do now is take the salt out of it and inject it right in your distribution line. You don't have to build 200, 300 miles of transmission line.
Yeah. When you've got an ocean in your backyard,
it changes
the dialogue. All right, Chuck Huckleberry, thank you very much. Hope you have a great weekend, Chuck.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, Dan Shear sticks around with me. We continue with Buckmaster on a Friday. Be right back.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Welcome back. The Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Our thanks to Chuck Huckleberry, Pima County Administrator, for coming in for our interview today. Dan Scheer sticks around from the interview with me. Dan, editor, and almost said publisher, but that's not true. Editor.
No thanks.
Green Valley News and Saurita Sun, and also the 24 WIC. A couple dozen WIC-associated newspapers that are here in the western United States, really all the way up to Alaska.
Yep.
All right. We keep hearing this. Why don't I just ask you, what's going on with the pecan orchards?
Well, let me tell you what's
people
not
are
going
on. Yeah, I mean, start there, perhaps. They're not all being ripped out. The trees are not being ripped
out. They're not pulling trees out of the ground. Right. They haven't sold it. Yeah, it's not going away. The only thing they've done is they have outsourced the processing, which is basically the shelling of the pecans. And it's outsourcing, like many other businesses have done outsourcing. They're going to now have that done in Georgia. And they are still running the farm. They are still growing pecans and build, and they still have 140 employees. It was about 270, I believe, and they are laying off quite a few people. I have been in that processing plant. It was really well run. There were some people who had worked there for literally decades, very clean and efficient, and it's really a sad thing to go away. But what they're pointing to, Bill, is about 3 years ago when we got into this tariff war with China, and President Trump started that really because China was stealing some of our intellectual property and knowledge, and President Trump wanted to make a point. But several industries were dragged into this, including the pecan industry. And at that point, there was a 7% tariff. That tariff went up to 57% at one point, and now is back down at about 24%. But just think of it this way. You send $1 million worth of pecans to China, and instantly, right now, they're taking $240,000 just for the tariff. And so this allowed, of course, other countries to undercut them, and China was a primo market for pecans. And so this is just one of the things that has hit them. COVID didn't make life any easier, and then there's more competition out of Mexico. And so I can tell you, I know the Walden family, and this just is a stab in the heart to them because they are such a big part of the community, helped largely build the community, and they know that this hurts. There are severance packages for the workers, and I know they're going to do everything they can to get them placed in jobs. And so this is not an easy thing for our community, but the pecan orchards remain. Nothing changes there.
What is their footprint?
They have 6,000 to 7,000 acres and about 100,000 trees.
That's a lot of pecans.
It is, and it goes from Green Valley down up to Sarita, and it's beautiful to drive through when they're in full bloom, like right now, and it's really just a special part of our community. And they are certainly going to be as involved as ever. The big hit there is in the announcement was that the pecan store, which is just a little store that sold all these pecan related treats, is going to close. Fairly soon, probably first quarter of next year.
After the Christmas season.
Yeah, and they were just a really big part of the community, and it's disappointing, but it's understandable.
What are you hearing from healthcare workers in your area saying that they're just really stressed to the max, and it's so frustrating when they see how many of these people this could have been avoided if they'd just had the shot?
Well, I was talking to our CEO of the Green Valley Hospital, which is Santa Cruz Valley Regional Hospital, and just yesterday, and they had a case where they could not transfer somebody who needed a higher level of care, and this is just routine, is that you stabilize them, and then you send them off. Every single hospital in Tucson turned them down, said we have too many COVID patients.
They
every
were filled
single
to the max.
Hospital. And then Banner up in the Phoenix area turned them down. And we weren't, he said he wasn't even sure that this man would survive the flight to Phoenix, much less.
Oh, that
and
is so, horrible.
So there's a doctor, Dr. Sylvain Seedy, who came down, does not have privileges at that hospital, but they granted him emergency privileges. And I will tell you, he jumped in his car, came down, did the procedure, saved this man's life.
Wow. Wow.
But again, this is one of those situations where a non-COVID patient was directly impacted by the fact that the hospitals are full of COVID patients, more than 90% in Pima County who are not vaccinated. And if you're thinking, well, that's a plug for getting vaccinated, it sure is. And so this is the reality. These are the numbers. And we were talking a little bit earlier about staffing, and what it all comes down to is the nurses. And they're all being hired off by the agency, so they become traveling nurses. I heard of two cases in the Tucson area where, in one of them, overnight, they lost out of one department every single nurse, and another one lost four nurses within a period of a week. And so this is where the problem is. There are plenty of beds. There's just nobody to staff them.
Are you saying that those nurses just said they couldn't take it anymore?
Well, some of them are
just
doing
moving
that.
On to other things.
And others, and I think down in Green Valley, they said that they're paying them $40-45 an hour or something like that. So if someone comes to you and says, hey, if you become a traveling nurse, you can be making $60-70.
Wow, yeah.
And what the agencies are charging the hospitals right now, according to the CEO of our hospital, is about $200 an hour per nurse. Now, we can't afford that. You just simply can't afford that. And so our hospital, which is 49 beds, right, as of Thursday, had 15 COVID patients, two of them in ICU, one later died, man in his mid-40s, unvaccinated. And the other one was going to have a rough go of it, too. So, we're packed to the gills, too, there. And again, we have empty beds. We just don't have anybody to staff them.
All right. More on that in the Green Valley News, I'm sure, coming
Absolutely.
Up. Thank you very much, Dan Scheer. Thanks for also the work you did on the show last week. Some great shows you had.
Thank you.
All right. Buckmaster continues coming up next. Weekend Watch. Dan Gibson from Visit Tucson telling us about all the stuff to do this weekend. Be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
And here we go with Weekend Watch, presented by our friends in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. While we'll be pushing, about 105 degrees on Sunday. Over in Silver City, the projected high, 87. So by my math, that's almost a 20-degree difference. So if you want to cool off, head over to Silver City, just a three-hour drive from Tucson. Lots to do, hike in the Gila National Wilderness, and how about the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument? For more information, visit southwestnewmexico.org. And Dan Gibson is with us now from Visit Tucson with our Weekend Watch. And Dan, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing real well, and lots going on. U of A football, the home season kicks off, but a lot going on in Southern Arizona this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm focused on one thing, Bill. It's Sonoran Restaurant Week.
I know.
Today,
yep.
Runs for 10 days, 50 restaurants this year. I mean, obviously, I talked about it on your show the other day, but so many options. I mean, here's the thing about Sonoran Restaurant Week. Visit Tucson is a sponsor, so clearly I'm a little bit biased. But there's something around the entire community. The price points at $25 and $35. At some places, that $35 will get you food for five.
Whoa.
So, yeah, right. The Taco Zopstone is a taco pack for five for $35. So this is what's amazing about it. And plus, there's so many new restaurants in Tucson. The pandemic has obviously been tough on restaurants. We lost some really great ones. But you do have some new ones that have opened up during the pandemic, so maybe people haven't tried them out. Zio Pepe here on the east side. Really spectacular restaurant. Devin Sanner, who used to be at Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails. Matt Cable, who is still at Fresco Pizza as well. They're doing and this one, I don't know if you enjoy the wine, Bill, but their $35 set menu includes a glass of house red and white, tamale polenta, which is super delicious, has smoked cheddar in it, or a lotte arancini for the first course. You get a fettuccine alfredo or their figgy stardust pizza as the second course. That also includes dessert, a choco flan or a taco cannoli. It's like a bizarro world cross between a taco cannoli. Zio Pepe on the east side, absolutely worth trying if you haven't had a chance during the pandemic, but also you can get yourself some tacos. Taco Rustico had the worst timing of all. They're on basically Grant and Oracle. They opened the day the city closed down all the restaurants. Like, right there. Boom.
Oh.
Totally imperfect timing. But back at it, doing a great job. They did a lot of to-go during the pandemic. They have a $25 meal for two, and that one's available for dine-in or take-out. So if you haven't, like, quite hit the point where you want to be in restaurants yet, which is an understandable take, you can actually get this one to go. It includes two quesabirria combos, which each includes two tacos, a traditional, like a little dipping sauce, side of rice and beans. You can also get those keto style, if that's your thing. I don't even know what that means, but people seem to care about it. You also get salsas and guacamole and two agua frescas. But it's hard to, the mix is something unbeatable. That's what we tried to do with Sonoran Restaurant Week. Laura Reese, who was on a guest on your show when I was on there, did an incredible job of getting just truly something for everybody.
When did that start, the Sonoran Restaurant Week?
Oh, it's in its third year, actually.
Wow. Yeah,
we had one pre-pandemic year and then one in the middle there and then this one on the sort of outside. But, yeah, it starts today. You could go eat at these places right now, Bill, right after the show. Close, put the mic away. Well, wipe the headphones down. You can head over to the Little One downtown, which has a Sonoran Restaurant Week special.
And before we go, only a few seconds, where would you go on the web to get more information?
SonoranRestaurantWeek.com. It has everything, also the social media, all that stuff. If somebody just wants a recommendation, hit me up on Twitter, DanGibson520. That's a free service I'm providing.
All right. Dan Gibson from Visit Tucson, always a pleasure. Have a great weekend, Dan. Thanks.
You too.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, wholly responsible for the content of the program. Original theme music composed by Christophon. Thanks to Rose Brandt and everybody here at KVOI, including Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show. All of us on the team wishing you well, and have a great weekend.